we finish off early. We still have to go and buy some good suits for tomorrow. Tomorrow is budget day. And so we need to buy brand new suits. Mom Chuno must go and get a new seamstress and a new wig. Yes, you're right. A brand new wig and a beret. A hat, please. Hairdo, brand new hairdo. And so that we all look nice and good during the close, what is this thing called? Lock-up session. And after the lock-up session, and I know some of you would then be interviewed by the media in terms of how the budget looks and so on and so on. We also would want to release the advocate. He's been with us for so long. He's bored by now. Really, he's been with us for so long. What we will do then is simply, as the members come in, we're not going to rush. We're just going to firstly deal with the mandates. They're not negotiating. They're just mandates. And so I will then allow members just to read their mandates. I will start with the Eastern Cape, Mr. Rob. Left nothing. The Gauteng man is nog nie hier nie. Weet jy wat is aan die gang? We will then read this on his behalf. The chairperson of the Finance Portfolio Committee, Mr. Beginko, has tabled the final mandate, voting mandate on the Financial Management Bill. B74-2008. The process that was followed, one, the Speaker, Mr. Richard Mdakane, informally referred the Financial Management of Parliament Bill B74-2008, Section 76, on 29 September 2008 in terms of the Gauteng Provincial Legislature, Standing Rule 231, Sub 1, for information and planning purposes. Thereafter, the Speaker formally referred the bill to the Portfolio Committee of the Finance for formal consideration and reporting on Thursday, 10 October 2008. The committee deliberated on the bill on 30 January 2009 when briefed by then SOP delegate, Mr. E.M. Sokoni. In this meeting, the committee agreed that the Parliament of South Africa is the custodian of the bill and that provinces are only affected by Schedule 1 of the bill. In light of this, the committee further agreed to endorse the bill subject to amendments of Schedule 1 of the bill, if any. Committee solicited and took into consideration the opinion of the Provincial Treasurer and the Speaker of the Gauteng Legislature on the bill. The principles. The bill seeks to regulate the financial management of Parliament in a manner consistent with its status in terms of the Constitution to ensure that all revenue expenditure and assets and liabilities of Parliament are managed efficiently, effectively and transparently, to provide provide for the responsibilities of persons entrusted with financial management in Parliament, to provide for financial management norms and standards for provincial legislatures, and to provide for matters connected therewith. However, the bill does not apply to provinces apart from Schedule 1. So the economic impact of the bill. The bill in its current form does not have any socio-economic impact for the province. Committee on the bill, the Finance Portfolio Committee, unanimously supports the principle and the detail of the financial management of Parliament bill. All right, here he's working. He's going to read his mandate. How do you?
Good morning, Chairperson. In terms of Section 65 of the Constitution, the Portfolio Committee recommends that the Gauteng Provincial Legislature delegates to the National Council of Provinces vote in favor of the financial management of Parliament Bill B74 of 2008.
No discussion. Now, Limpopo. The Honorable Speaker is kindly informed that the provincial briefing on the aforementioned bill took place at the Parliamentary Village on Friday 30, 2009. The Joint Portfolio Committee. The Honorable Speaker is kindly informed that the provincial briefing on the aforementioned bill took place at the Parliamentary Village on Friday, 30 January 2009. This is commitment. This is how committed the people were. It's Limpopo. Yeah, they had to do it at Acacia. I'm not sure whether it's Acacia or whatever.
But it was,
yes. The Joint Portfolio Committees on Provincial Treasury and Provincial Administration were briefed by the NCOP Permanent Delegate, Honorable DJ Porter. The bill, classified as a proposed Section 761, was referred to the Portfolio Committee on Provincial Treasury on 27 January. For consideration is due for plenary on Tuesday, the 3 February 2009. Since the House is on recess, the Honorable Speaker is hereby requested to confer the mandate on behalf of the House on the province's delegation in the National Council of Provinces to support and vote in favor. Mandate is attached here. The mandate then report on the joint committees. Financial Management of Parliament Bill 2008-74 was referred to the legislature by the NCOP, and the legislature in turn referred to the bill to the Portfolio Committee on Provincial Treasury. Purpose of the bill, consideration of the bill, the committee comments. Committee considered the bill and was concerned about the treatment of unspent funds by parliaments in Clause 23. Committee supports Clause 23 as long as it is constitutional and in line with the norms and standards of financial accountability, and feels that this clause should be reviewed to comply with the best financial management practice. Recommendation: the committee, having considered and supported the bill, recommends to this Honorable House that a final mandate be conferred to the NCOP delegate to support and vote in favor. That is now in Limpopo. And there's no Mpumalanga person here. And let's then hear what Mpumalanga has to say. The report. Well, the committee examined the bill, and after extensive deliberations, the committee supports the bill. Is qualified with the authority to vote in favor. Do you want me to read the whole long story? They've started with supporting, but there's a long story. Mpumalanga. Introduction, objectives, method of work, observations, recommendations. The committee examined the bill and after extensive deliberation supports the bill. The individual pieces of provincial legislation to be finalized immediately after this bill has been passed. The chairperson wishes to thank permanent delegates from the National Council of Provinces and the members of the portfolio committee. That is Mpumalanga North Cap.
The committee confers on the permanent delegates to participate in deliberations of the final mandate and support the bill.
Northwest, before that. Northwest.
Chairperson, the committee, I will not be able to read these other pages, but it is evident that the committee has engaged intensively around the bill. Fortunately, where I have to read, it's a bit legible. The committee has been, last page, 5, committee resolution. The committee, having raised and deliberated on all matters and proposals contained in this report, unanimously resolved to support the bill. The committee shall therefore, through the office of the Speaker, call for a motion to be adopted that permanent delegate representing the Northwest in the National Council of Provinces vote for the passing of the Financial Management of Parliament Bill 74B7428. Signed. Thank you.
Okay, first cup.
Final mandate of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament on the Financial Management of Parliament Bill B74-2008 in COP, as resolved by the Standing Committee on Finance and Economic Development on 4th of February 2009. The Western Cape Provincial Parliament, having considered the subject of Financial Management of Parliament Bill, referred to the Provincial Parliament in terms of the rules of the National Council of Provinces, begs to report that it confers on the Western Cape's delegation in the NCOP the authority to support the bill in principle. Consideration, however, should be given to the matters of concern, and in particular the matters raised by the Auditor General, see attached memorandum. The committee also wishes to draw attention to the contents of the attached letter on 13th of October 2008 by the Western Cape MEC for Finance, Economic Development and Tourism, and confirms that the committee endorses the views expressed by the MEC. Shall I read the letter? It's actually important. I think you need to listen. Financial management. I wish to draw to your attention to the Financial Management of Parliament Bill, which was formally introduced at the National Parliament during September 2008. We all know the objectives of the new bill, so I won't go through that. It goes without saying that the separation of powers is one of the cornerstones of our constitutional democracy, and it requires that Parliament and provincial legislatures remain responsible for sound financial management of their respective institutions. Consistent with the separation of powers doctrine, there is legislation that applies to Parliament. For example, the Powers and Privileges Act and the PFMA, the latter which applies to Parliament and provincial legislatures to a limited extent. The Financial Management of Parliament Bill seeks to consolidate and regulate the financial management of Parliament in a single act and to provide a framework for the financial management of provincial legislatures. My understanding of the National Bill is that it is incumbent upon provincial legislatures to follow with their own legislation. To improve the oversight function of the by the legislature, provincial treasuries in the process of investigating the possibility of drafting a position paper which is in line with the financial management of Parliament Bill. This position paper will primarily focus on the oversight mandate of the legislature and the effectiveness of the current methodology used. In view of the aforementioned, I humbly request that the provincial legislature of the Western Cape adopts similar legislation to regulate the financial management of provincial parliament as a matter of urgency. The provincial treasury is willing to provide any assistance required to accelerate the enactment of this legislation. Kind regards, Garth Strachan, MPM. Thank you.
Okay. Then the last one is from the Free Province. It's a one pager. The name of the bill, the number of the bill, date of the deliberation. The Free State Legislature voted in favor of the bill by the concerns raised by the stakeholders, Secretary to Parliament, Auditor General, and the briefing must be addressed. That's it. Okay. Now we're done. I think then let's just deal then with these concerns very, very. I think you must have our one pager now. Are you ready to deal with that quickly?
Yes.
Can we have some copies of that one page?
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
this is what the document looks like.
Yeah.
You have to select committee on finance.
Yeah. Proceed.
Thank you very much. The first category is those concerns of the Secretary to Parliament. If you can recall that one of the concerns was that this expansive provision in the bill for the joint committee is unnecessary. So in the form of what one will get amendments to the bill to suggest that there what would be necessary to take out the reference to a joint committee and put in reference to an oversight mechanism, and then certain of the provisions will fall away that sets out the membership of the mechanism and so on. However, the crux will remain that the presiding officers, so the executive authority, cannot be members of this committee, and the joint rules will have to provide for this mechanism, and then there's certain consequential amendments that must be made throughout the bill to just refer to oversight mechanism. Now, in regard to the functions of this, let me refer to what the bill is saying at the moment, the joint committee. There was a submission from the Secretary to Parliament that the bill must make it clear that they will not oversee the budget preparation stage, but they will only oversee the financial management, the sort of ex post facto, after the fact issues. And that suggestion is also made. If one looks at the third bullet on the first page, to admit paragraphs A and B in the list that sets out the functions, and then if one turns the page in clause 17, there one will then omit the references to referring the strategic plan, performance plan, national budget, adjustments budgets to the joint committee. That is, will be dealt with as they're dealt with at this point in time, and what the joint committee will receive will be the audited financial statements. Now, I just want to emphasize that it's just to make it clear in the bill that there's a separation of functions between the executive authority and mechanisms set out there to prepare the budget of Parliament and the oversight of that budget, how that budget was spent. And that's where the joint committee will come in. The second main point of the Secretary to Parliament was on clause 7. That is the management functions of the accounting officer. The accounting officer's management functions, if he deliberately or grossly negligently refused to comply, is of course guilty of a criminal offence. So the argument there was to remove issues of having to send senior managers to financial management training and to have a performance management system, because those are normal management functions. You don't have to enforce them with criminal sanctions. Then what I did not put in the block was the third one, which pertains to the prohibition on contracts. There was a discussion in the committee there. I think in the submission it was said that we should omit those references which are vague, a person in the employ of the state or someone who has a controlling stake. But during the discussions, if my memory serves me, Honourable Chair, the Secretary of Parliament said, no, we do not want to remove them, we just want to have clarity on them, because they will be difficult to implement. So I haven't put in a suggestion there to remove them from the bill. Left it like that. The concerns of the Fiscal and Financial Commission, of course the main concern was that this bill is not necessary. We need an amendment to the PFMA, but I've left that out because that is not what this committee is considering. So their main concern was the issue of unspent funds. Now on the issue of unspent funds, the way I phrased their concern was just to remove the issues of Parliament is not required to return unspent funds, approved or appropriated, and to say Parliament is required to return those funds. And because we have that position there, the other clauses will fall away that sets out the qualifications around unspent funds. The National Treasury, Honourable Chair, did not make specific provisions. They raised concerns, if I recall, about how are the provinces going to have uniformity in their bills, and is this necessary while there's a review of the PFMA. None of this is strictly within the ambit that I to put in the one pager, so I just put their main concern. I said nothing in the bill that provides for financial leases and public-private partnerships. And that is issues that will be addressed in the review of the Public Finance Management Act. If that must be in the bill, one will have to redraft or put in chapters on those provisions there. I might just add that issues of public-private partnerships, although it's not in the PFMA, it's dealt with in the regulations, in the Treasury regulations, so Parliament could do the same to deal with your public-private partnership under the heading of regulations for your supply chain management. The Auditor General raised a few concerns, and I would like to say, in my humble opinion, Honourable Chair, some of those issues are already taken up in the bill. There was one point where they wanted to bring in performance indicators also under Clause 7, which is the management functions of the accounting officer. My view there is that there's provision in the bill for performance indicators that must be in your strategic plan. To bring them under the Clause 7 is once again bring them within your criminal law sanctions, and it's not necessary because they're already dealt with elsewhere in the bill in a correct place. So the critical point that they would make is that in the issue of banking, rather than say that the money must be deposited promptly, specifically Clause 31.2b, money must be deposited on a weekly basis. So if one can look at that last block on page 2, there's a reference also to Section 25.1a. Section 25.1a says that Parliament must open a bank account in which all money must be deposited promptly, and then that is repeated in 31.2b, and the Auditor General wants 31.2b to then actually explain what promptly means, and that must be on a weekly basis, and that would be then consistent with the reconciliation requirements in the same section. Honourable Chair, then I ask your permission just to put an explanation of unspent funds the way I understand it. I will leave that for the committee to deliberate should they so wish. Just to say that at this point in time, unspent funds are not returned by Parliament. And at this point in time, we fall under the sort of spirit of the PFMA with regard to checks and balances, so we do not return unspent funds. The PFMA doesn't require it. Treasury doesn't require it. And Parliament's spending of its funds can be monitored through our Section 32, PFMA Section 32 reports, which is a government gazette publication. This bill will strengthen that oversight mechanism in that it requires monthly statements to be tabled so it's accessible, more accessible than the Government Gazette. You don't pay for that, and those will then be referred purposively to the Joint Committee to look at the spending patterns of Parliament. This bill is strengthening that checks and balance system with regard to unspent funds. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Right. Let's then go to the bill now, page by page. The first page has the anything to raise there. Page 1. Page 2. Three. Four. Five. Six. On 7, you're just removing the joint committees, for oversight. That part 1, chapter 2, part 1. Joint Committee Oversight Mechanism.
Yes, that was the part.
That's right. Okay, then page 8. Okay.
All patient Joint Committee goes up.
The content does not go, anything that has to do with Joint Committee. Exactly. All right. Page 8. Page 9. On page 9, let's look at the responsibilities of officials. Roman 3. Any unauthorized expenditure, irregular, etc., etc. My focus there would be on unauthorized. How does it link to clause 21? And clause 20. Again, there's unauthorized expenditure there. I'm talking donor funding, that side. And then there's again this 20 and sub, especially the end of any unauthorized expenditure. Is it too much of the same word? Just in respect of unauthorized spending.
No, actually, I don't think it's too much of the same way there. What
the bill is trying to do there is just to say that's obviously not what the way we want to go with unauthorized expenditure, but it does happen. And when it happens, it needs to be reported to the accounting officer. The accounting officer will have to report it to the Auditor General. And there could, of course, be the issue of that unauthorized expenditure was an executive directive with financial implications. And then how does Parliament deal with that unauthorized expenditure? Either one must then authorize it, which will mean we'll have to authorize it through a bill that the Minister of Finance will have to introduce, or one will have to...
That's exactly the problem. Because on 21, it is a charge against Parliament's own funds. And then you're raising, therefore, a bill that the Minister of Finance must also produce. How do you then deal with that?
Okay, 21 has to do with your donor funds, which the minister cannot authorize. So those unowned funds would be Parliament's, either your donor funds or the unspent funds of the previous year that's been rolled over. So any unauthorized expenditure of donor funds will have to be recovered from there.
Should we keep 1 instead of 2? Can we discuss this one? And if there's that problem there, any unauthorized spending of donor funding must be a charge against Parliament. But then two, becomes clear, if it is not, the person responsible must be made to pay that. Well, what do we think of that?
A short word on clarity there. What 21.1 wants to do is they wants to prevent the instance where Parliament overspends its budget on own funds. We were supposed to have a new video conferencing system that the European Union has given us money for, and we've overspent that. It prevents us then using our appropriated funds to cover the losses there. So either we'll have to use our unspent funds, rollover funds, or other donor funds. And if that cannot happen, if the unauthorized expenditure was a blatant disregard of an executive instruction, for instance, then one will have to say to that official, you are financially liable to repay that money in terms of two. So I would, at this stage, think that we need both one and two. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, just for clarity as well, we get donor funds from Denmark or whatever, and that is for a specific project. So if they overspend on that one, we can't take money from, say, Norway that was intended for another project to bail that one out. So what happens then?
Then they must go into the equitable share of Parliament, if you like, in order to deal with the shortfall. Is that what we want to happen? Or do we want to hold somebody accountable?
We must hold somebody accountable. We can't just dip into taxpayers' money for something else.
That is about two. But then the problem is, you see, because part of the problem of this overspending might be because of poor planning, etc., misalignment and issues of not prioritizing. And so how do we deal with that one? If the official had not planned appropriately, if the budget was not done appropriately, how do we deal with that one? Okay, let's come to...
Because, Chair, you know, it's like if you take... If they're using big grants for something else. I mean, you can't do it.
Come back to 22. It says, unauthorized expenditure incurred by Parliament does not become a charge against the National Revenue Fund unless A. The expenditure is an overspending of Parliament's approved budget and Parliament appropriates an additional amount to cover the overspending, or the expenditure is unauthorized for another reason and Parliament authorizes the expenditure as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. Now the problem I have here is that initially, there's this matter that is 23 of unspent money, which is an issue we still have to deal with. Now, again, you've got this problem of overspending. And again, plans, etc. It has to do, again, with issues of planning, priorities, and so on. And so how do we deal with that one? Mind you, they must then go now and then dip in the National Revenue Fund, and yet they do not return unspent funds to the National Revenue Fund. How do we deal with that one? When they've got unspent money, it's kept in Parliament's coffers. Now there is this overspending. They've got to go then into the National Revenue Fund. Yes, madam.
Honourable Chairperson, shouldn't there be something in writing that speaks to the shifting of funds, having something gazetted, so as to know exactly what happened to the monies? I think it would be better to have something in writing that is gazetted if there's any shifting of funds.
No, look, the CEO will pick up the projected overspending and alert the executive, in other words, the presiding officers in writing, etc. That he will do. But then the issue I'm raising is that, on the one hand, in terms of this law, clause 23, they've got to keep unspent money. But then once they have this unspent money, they then go overboard, overspend. Yet, ordinarily, unspent money does not revert to the National Revenue Fund in respect of Parliament. Yes, Chairman.
No, Chair, I just want to find out something. If you say you underspend, what's going to happen to that money? Is it still going to serve the same purpose that you couldn't spend that particular financial year? Or are you just going to keep it and then you budget, you come up with a new budget?
That's the issue we must also interrogate ourselves. In respect of Parliament, it looks like that's what happens. They just keep this money. Whether then it's going to be used for something else or the same thing next year, we're not sure about that. Now, in respect of departments, we know that underspending is withheld and reallocated to performing areas. Now, we're not sure here what happens. Maybe advocate can tell us.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The principle, I think everybody here is quite aware of it, the principal purpose of this bill is to ensure proper planning, financial planning. So we have a budget, and obviously things can go or can surprise you during the implementation of this budget. Just think of the most obvious example would be a huge shift in prices of airline tickets or exchange controls changes, radical exchange control changes. So suddenly you're faced with a demand in one area of your budget which you don't have enough funds. Okay. So there can be unauthorized expenditure going over the budget, but it's still within the purpose of the budget. Okay. Similarly, one can then be faced with a saving, an underspending. And that saving one can then use to defray expenses in the other part of the environment, to a certain extent, to the 8% limit. So that is what is envisaged still as proper planning in terms of the bill, that 8% use of a saving somewhere, not underspending, but a saving. To defray expenses on the other side. I'm being interrupted. Should I stop or are you going to protect me?
In hello, it's Wales. Thank you, Chief.
Why we are saying unspent money is equal to underspent? Because the definition of saving is, there is a definition. If you had set yourself a particular target, you meet the target, and then there is some money left. But then if you have not met the target, and then that's not saving. That's exactly the problem here. So I'm saying, In that respect, we can't be talking savings. But if you're talking unforeseen circumstances, escalation of prices, then there's also the adjustment period. How do we then? Because that time of the year is going to come, which is October. Okay? Now, you there's unspent money. There's the... And this is what happens for many departments and everybody. If things had come that you had not planned for, unforeseen things, for instance, then the adjustment period then kicks in. Okay? Now, I'm not sure then if that happens in this respect. Yes, Mr. Huerman.
Chair, can we first just get clarity in layman's term? This unspent money that is not taken anywhere that remains, what is its purpose? What's going to happen to that money before we go to the others? Because this will lead us, so that you must have a clear understanding that this money has not been spent. And if it has not been spent, what's going to happen to that money? If we can get clarity on that. Then a layman's term, don't go to all these other things. Straight, as it's so to allow, you know, this is what is supposed to happen.
Honorable Chair, so that money must be part of the budget of the next year. It doesn't lie as this kind of reserve, contingency, or trading account, slush fund, if I can call it that. It doesn't. It must be, in terms of the bill, it must be appropriated through Parliament's budget again. So we have to include that in our budget. Not
again, does this planning thing comes in? Because, remember, the plan was for this year. Now, 100 million rand is unspent or underspent. And, of course, you had not achieved what you were going to do next year. And so it kicks in into the other budget, which is, in fact, it was not even rolled over for that matter. Was it rolled over?
Reallocated.
Okay. Let me hear Mr. Pott. I'm coming. We're on unspent funds page. We were on page 10, but we're linking that. We're just dealing with this unspent thing now.
Yeah, Chair, yes. If you're talking about unspent money, if there was budget for a project for 100 million, and they complete that project, and the project costs 90 million, then you can use that other 10 million. Well, that is then a saving. You can use that 10 million in a next year budget. But if you budget for 100 million, and you spend this year only 90 million, but the project what was actually budgeted for is not completed, then that money can't be a part of the next year budget, but it was actually to complete that project in regarding of that process. Then this, as we to call it in normal terms of what we know, this are all over. Because you can't say then that project, 10 million is now this year, the budget is planning and it was not good planning and the project is finished but it's 10 million rand short, but the project is not completed, 10 million rand over, but the project is not completed. So that money can't be used then for something else that must complete that project. Also in donor funds, I mean, no country will give you any money for donor funds if there's not a budget and a project allocated to this and that and that, and a business plan in regarding of that process. Now, sometimes I'm concerned now, what is mentioned here is, you budget for this year for an X amount of 50 million or 100 million for a project, and you get it from United Nations or whatever case may be. But during the year, the financial situation changes like that you are short. Now, that shortage then, where was that shortage then coming from in regarding to complete that specific project? Well, prices can go down, and then you have the surplus. And what will you do then with that surplus? You can use then next year in another a project. Or what you account then to that country who make the donation to you to ask, can I use that money for another project? So that's issues what is not very clear in regarding of that unspent and overspent money in regarding of that process to keep the money. Understand, but what is the situation there?
Look, let me raise another matter which is in the bill that must also receive our attention, not now, maybe in future. That relates to page 12, cash management. 24B. There must be a policy for investing money not immediately required. Now, it means then that unspent money might also be invested. That's another possibility. Is that what you need? Do you need Parliament to be a fund manager? A fund manager. If it invests. I mean, look, this is a matter with it's been taken from the MFMA, section 13B of the MFMA. And it is a matter we are raising sharply with municipalities, ourselves, you know that. Why would you invest money when you need it? In the context. But now Parliament here, when it has this unspent money, surely now it would not be going into another budget. I'm just assuming, advocate. It does not become part of the next year's budget. It is invested somewhere. Because if you hear what this is said, it is money not immediately needed. Yes, Mr. Sokon.
I know that I'm going to raise something maybe not very, what you call it, in line with what we're discussing. So the issue that I'm worried about the line of our discussion is that we started with this bill. No? Now, once we started with the deal, we had, maybe we should have got minutes of the, what you call, of what we discussed previously, so that we don't reinvent the wheel. We'll never finish the deal if we reinvent the wheel. I'm saying here with regards, for instance, to unspent funds, there were specific things that we are not unhappy with. But now if we're starting all over again, I mean, we know.
No, we're not starting all over again.
No, let me just
show you how we're doing it.
No, the problem, your problem, Chairperson, is that if somebody doesn't want to call, agree with you, you want to interrupt because I don't agree with you. Allow me to finish, then you correct me if we don't agree. Well, a point of order is raised. Then yes.
Mr. Sokwan.
Chair, I'll put it very bluntly. Sokwan is not chairperson of this committee. He's chairperson of another committee. You are chairperson of this committee. Thank you, sir.
No, let's hear what he has to say. What are you saying?
No, what
you see, because what I was saying is, when you left, in fact, in the first instance, we're not reinventing the wheel. That's the first thing. Secondly, what we were doing, we were taking this piece of legislation page by page. And in that discussion, again, we're not reinventing the wheel. What we are doing here, we are raising issues that all some of the mandates are raising. We did say that, okay, it must go through. But these are some of the matters which, in fact, I did say we are not going to resolve now. We are not going to resolve them. Precisely because they are matters that we must lift up as we proceed going forward as issues that need further attention. And unfortunately, that is not reinventing the wheel.
No, Chair, the point that I'm raising, Commissioner, you might want to make a follow-up. The point that I'm raising, Comrade, Chairperson, is that I agree with what you call with the process that we're dealing with. That's where we are. I agree with that, ne? And with the, what you call sections that we have identified as critical, what you call. I agree with those issues. I'm saying, my worry is that, let's say, for example, taking the Section 24, say 23 unspent funds, né? We had a specific, what you call, reservations about that. Né? Now, I'm saying, if we go back to the original things that we raised, and not saying that, what is it that we are, that we should be doing now about this clause? That's why I'm raising this, what you call, this point, but I'm saying, we should be addressing to the, ourselves. We listen to the AG, we listen to everybody. Now, what we're supposed to do is, we have those things, what are we doing about that? I agree the other day we made a mistake, and I was responsible for that, to say we should not, maybe, we should just uncover these things and leave them there. It was wrong.
No, Chair, I think we are making some progress. Because what Comrade Sogoni is raising, it's what we are doing. We had serious questions around issues that was part and parcel of the bill. We just want to see how far are we in terms of those issues. Your unspent funds, what is that the committee is saying should happen? We are not reinventing the wheel. So that when we say that we adopt this, we know some of the issues that we can address now has been addressed or will be addressed, as the chairperson indicated. It's a long-term type, but those that we can change now, like for instance, joint committee, we had a problem with it. It has come to mechanisms. Those are issues that we can change. Unspent, what is it that we are saying? That's why we want the proper clarity. What is the understanding of unspent money? Because if you say unspent, we expect you to have budgeted for this particular project, but you did not spend. Because we are saying that you keep that money. For what for? So we must be clear when we say that if you have unspent money, you must commit that money. That's maybe what we must say. Commit it to that particular project so that particular project must finish, must come to its finality. Or if you have finalized the project and there is money which has not been spent, take that money, can become part of the new budget with a new program or whatsoever. And those are the issues that we are looking at, so that when we say that we take this bill and we adopt it, we know that our mind is very clear in terms of that. That's why, because those things are critical. We all know from this committee, Chair, we have traveled the length and breadth of this country. We always lambasted at municipalities, underspending. So we can't say now it's in Parliament, we must turn a blind eye to it. It can't really happen. We must know what is there that is going to happen. So that whoever comes and they go to oversight, when there is an unspent, they know that also in Parliament, that what we are practicing to municipalities or department, we are also practicing it. It's very important. Because there is an understanding or a view that might say that we are not an implementing agent. How do we take it? What is our argument? Because the departments, they are implementing agents. They need to implement whatever that particular program is. How do you view it in terms of Parliament if we are not spending that particular money? Now, those are things that we must be able to iron out so that we must close that particular matter and adopt the bill if we can. Thank you, Chair.
Well, you've said it so well. Mr. Colwin.
Chairperson, the latter statement of my colleague, Honorable Kuyamai, makes me to think that he is recommending that we should adopt. But I wanted to say, in the context of timing, I partly share sentiments raised by Honorable Sokoli. But I feel if we still want to have more deliberations around this treatment of unspent funds, I feel why can't we zoom into what has been submitted by this state law advisor and check whether it makes sense to us, because we also have some comments by various provinces. whereby with me I would rather be comfortable if we were discussing in those lines. Thank you.
For clarification and concern, this committee isn't forced by time to do anything. We have to do the job properly, whether it takes a week longer or 2 weeks longer. Time's not a constraint. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just on two issues that were raised just now. The issue of donor funds is left for an issue between Parliament and the donor. It's not part of the budget here. That is something that we must make. So if there's an underspending of donor funds, the regulations between the donor, the conditions the donor set out, the contractual relationship between the donor and Parliament will be guiding how that process must unfold. Okay, so when we're talking about unspent funds, okay, those are unspent funds of Parliament's revenue sources. Those revenue sources include your appropriated funds and, if you want to call it, rollover or unspent funds, excluding donor funds. Okay, so those unspent funds, in terms of Clause 23, must be part of the budget of next year. So we will see what the aim is for that unspent funds. As I say, it's not going to into a general slash account or a trading account or whatever one wants to call it. The question that has then come up to say, but what if Parliament wants to take that and invest it? We're not a fund manager. Now, that question I'm going to answer just broadly by reference to Section 50 or Clause 56. 56 sets out provisions pertaining to your preparation of financial statements. And there is a requirement in 56, namely sub 2C, provide a summary of all investments of Parliament as at the end of the financial year. So, it's disclosed. If one looks at... Well, Honourable Chair, with respect, I want to say that question is going to be asked within this oversight mechanism. To sit there and to say to the accounting officer or to the executive authority, why did
it shouldn't be delayed to the oversight. We are going to pass this. Passing it must not come and haunt us. When somebody said, but why did these people allow this? I'm saying we are raising this on a daily basis with municipalities. Question is, why was it passed then to allow municipalities to invest when they needed every cent? That's the issue. It should not be delayed. We might delay it for oversight, but also let's also understand it now. I'm raising it because of our own experience of having engaged with this issue of investing. Now, we know people, for instance, people would come and ask for more money. Municipalities are always saying, no, we need more money, and that money is sitting in investment somewhere. Now, what would happen if the meltdown were to happen? When there was some investment somewhere. And so these are some of the kinds of issues we're looking at.
Honourable Chair, I agree with those things. I would just say that there is a situation where there's a project Parliament is busy with, let's say the space utilisation project. We have for the financial year, hypothetically speaking, 30 million rand. We need to pay that in instalments. We know that we need to pay, say, 15 million by the middle of the year. What do we do in the meantime with that 15 million? Can we put it in a call-up account with the bank? Isn't that an investment policy? So we get more interest from it. Or should we just leave it in our current account where we get 8%? So those things... And then in the bill, one doesn't want to cut yourself short. You rather want to allow... to say this is what you can do with that money, but you need to have very strong checks and balances, your oversight mechanism there. And that's why I brought clause 56 in. And that there's also reference there to your unauthorized expenditure, your losses and disciplinary steps. So the question that is critical is, yes, there are controversial issues that Parliament as the primary oversight body in South Africa is now providing for itself in the bill.
are the oversight mechanisms Parliament's providing for itself strong enough? That is the critical question, and one needs to look at that. And my opinion, I've said it before, I think this is a step in the right direction, and practice will tell whether it's strong enough, but it's certainly stronger than the mechanisms we have now, because it's specifically in the bill. We're not falling in between two or three pieces of archaic legislation and the PFMA, which is only partially applicable to us. On my handout on the unspent funds, I don't make reference to 56, that's why I had to start with there, but my general comment there is that Parliament is a separate arm of government in terms of the separation of powers. So we are not the same as a government department, and this is critical to our constitution. The Constitutional Court has accepted that and confirmed it in their certification judgment. So when Parliament receives appropriated money, now we know theoretically that should be Parliament appropriates what Parliament needs. We don't have to go with a hat in our hand and ask for a handout or stand in line for a piece of the pie. But in practice, we know there's negotiations and consultations that will have to precede any kind of agreement on the final version of the appropriation bill. And a lot of people, public commentators have said, but Parliament shouldn't go through that process. We should just get what we need. But let's say in practice, we get a certain amount of money for a budget, for a specific purpose. We have planned for that. Best case scenario is we have a saving on some of those items. On the other overspending, we can balance it off with environment, but there's still money left. The question then is, why as a separate arm of government does Parliament have to go and give that money back? If Parliament decides that that is what it wants to do, of course, that's Parliament's decision. We can do that with this piece of legislation. But certainly, without legislation saying we must do it, the principle has always been that Parliament retains that money. And then, once again, one must just make sure that your checks and balances on that money, especially in a development state like South Africa, where social justice is a critical element throughout the whole constitution, whether that is strong enough for those purposes. So there's a constitutional imperative. There's a reason behind why we should keep unspent funds and why government departments...
Let's hear what... You see, the point here is that let's not take that discussion for now, because it is not a constitutional principle. We know there is an agreement between Parliament and National Treasury to keep unspent funds. It's not a constitutional principle. It's not in the PFMA. I'm not sure what the reasons were for that. When I spoke to Mr. Mahlangu, he did raise this with me, and the Minister of Finance also raised it with me. But when I said to Mr. Mahlangu, but this is a wrong practice, because as Parliament, what you are doing is to apportion to yourselves as Parliament something that is wrong. And therefore, you have no moral right to judge other people on that. That's the bottom line. If you then say to people, don't underspend, you then said, well, you are right. Because clearly then it means if. And so I was saying to him, what we might not want to do is to legislate that Parliament underspends. Maybe we might want to say, let's also review that agreement in the next Parliament. Because again, Parliament must also lead by example. This moral authority issue of saying, why underspend, why overspend when you yourselves as Parliament are doing the same things? For us, those are some of the critical things, really. Credibility, integrity, etc., etc. Mr. Robertson. Okay.
Chair, you are just opening the debate further, especially when you go to the PFMA. Because if you look at page 3 of this particular report, it wants to negate what you are saying, that it's not part of the PFMA, which has been reported in this thing that we are doing. Maybe we can go through that particular clause, which is clause 54 and clause 4(1) of F. what is that that is supposed to happen. And I think we'll be able to get our answers there.
Chair, in terms of this, in terms of what you, the discussion that you said you had with the chairperson of the NSOP, and the discussion that we had with AG, I think that there was an agreement about the concern. But maybe what is left is, the concern, the issue that was raised with the AG that day was whether we need this clause in the interim. Maybe what we could do, the option that we have is to remove 23.1, for instance. But again, even on 23.2, I'm just trying to check this cross-reference of 18.1b is not very clear. It's not very clear what is it saying, because if you go there, it cross-references to 16.2.3. So, again, there's no clarity. But if we were to use that simple language that people can understand, that of saying these funds must have been committed so that there is continuation. But I try to look at 18.1b, 16.2.3. They are not saying that. They are not very clear. I think that there should be clarity on commitment, funds that are committed to a particular project, so that people understand that it's like a rollover. You know, I mean, a division of revenue will allow that if the funds are already committed, then those funds can be rolled over until that project is done. But if we just say no, unspent funds must be kept, it's correct that we're going to have a difficulty now in going to provinces or to local government to say, how do you have this? How do you make sure that, or we ask for stoppage of funds or anything when we have legislated it. It becomes very difficult. So I'm saying maybe we could look at those options.
You know, if my colleague Kuyamon referred to page 3, the principle what we had to accept here, and if you're talking about the PFMA free stance funds or whatever case may be, the parliament is not a government department. So if we accept that principle, then all the other issues fall away. So if we accept the principle of that clause there, or that part, what was actually there in saying that the parliament cannot be treated the same manner, in other words, the constitutional position of parliament that is control of the own finance consists. So if we accept that paragraph totally, as is there in there, Chair, then the discussion of keeping money from parliament is total fall away. Then they have the right to do that. If you read that, if we accept that paragraph in regarding of what they say there according to the constitution, and as advocate Jenkins explained, that the constitutional court require we have accepted that part. That parliament is not a part, and I'm not saying otherwise. Chair, I'm only saying if we accept that a paragraph, then we had to accept the issue. Chair, you can't ignore that, because the constitution required in regard separation of power and valid and so. If the constitution have accepted in that way, I'm not a lawyer or an advocate, but I can explain to you, but if the constitution stated that, then we can't otherwise make a decision in regard to it. I'm just thinking on my own way. That is if that then it's not a situation of PFMI.
If the constitution says so, that is the higher authority. Then we have to accept that parliament is not a not a government institution. Then we have to not argue about return funds and
that. Then listen, we are saying government has three arms. Parliament, the executive and judiciary. That's government. In narrow terms now. And even in broad terms. But then what is said here is that Parliament is not a department. I'm not disputing that. But the issue that we're talking about here is we're talking public funds. And unfortunately, public funds belong to nobody because this all it's taxpayers' money, all of this. It's given to Parliament, it's given to departments, it's given to everybody as public funds. And so how do we deal with that one? That's the issue. We can't be trying to be, what is the word, semantic about it. This is the bottom line. The basis of the discussion, we are dealing with public finances. That's the long and short of it.
No.
Yes, ma'am.
No, sir. We don't deny that. But we must look at, that's why at that time I said we must check if we are an implementing agent. I was trying to bring in a picture that shows you if we say that the departments, they are different from parliament. Departments, they have targets. Department, this particular financial year, are eradication of bucket system. It's a target, they need to deliver, they need to see to it that a particular thing happens. And that is an implementing agent that is supposed to implement. Now, if we read this particular page 3, it clearly says what the PMFA is saying in terms of Parliament. It is quite clear. Now, unless we are going to reinvent the wheel in terms of that particular document, as Comrade Sogonia said, because it is clear, it has been adopted, we have been practicing, and it is very clear. The advocate came up with clauses, here is it. If we can just go to it, it is quite clear what is there that is supposed to happen. It's in the book, chair. We can't change it. It is very clear. For us, it's just certain issues that we must get clarity on it so that we must know how do we take our to construct our statements. But it is in this book. He went out to investigate, to research, so that he must give us a very informative report around what is it that we can do. If you look at the Parliament is not a government department and cannot be treated in the same manner.
Hang on, we will come back to that discussion. He was also given by us to do that.
Yes.
He did say it.
Yes.
But we're still proceeding. Okay. Then page 13. Any funds from Parliament to any other entity, the accounting officer must obtain a written assurance from the entity that it implements effectively. Aren't we also expecting something like business plans here, advocate? So just before the assurances, yes, ma'am.
Do we have, does Parliament have entities anyway? And if so, what are these entities?
I'm not aware of any entities. The only entity that I'm aware of where there's a transfer would be this proposed budget office which Parliament wants to set up, or which the Money Bills Amendment Procedure envisages. But that's obviously not finalized yet. I'm not aware of any entities Parliament is involved with transferring money, like I'm not aware of it. I'm not saying there's not, but I'm not aware of any transfers, Parliament.
Not accurate, therefore, to have transfers here.
Let me correct myself.
Yeah.
Now, there, of course, we... I don't know if it's the same as a transfer, but we do contribute to memberships. For instance, the International Parliamentary Union, Inter-Parliamentary Union, Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, and the Africa Group of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. So I'm not sure if those go through as transfers, but there's certainly a transfer of money there.
What you must do, we will be going on lunch now. If you can just quickly walk over to your office so that you just clarify this one. Because we do want to finish that. Yes?
Chief, donor funds. When Parliament gets donor funds, I think we need a bit of clarity. Is there criteria on that money given by the donor? Or is it just give quite a lot? Thanks, Chief.
There's always criteria. You have to qualify for that. And the same audit requirements that pertain within South Africa pertains, for instance, with EU funding when they're transferring money to their entities they want to donate money to. So they require Parliament to set up a budget, to have a purpose, set out there a business plan. It's quite detailed.
I think that in the mandate that you're giving Advocate Jenkins, we should make a distinction. You see, if you're paying subscriptions to what you call it, to the EU, to AU, to anybody, it's not an entity. An entity is something that we establish to do certain things, né? That you have control over. It is an entity. You can, tomorrow you can disband if you're not happy. But if you're paying what you call the, I mean, payment of subscription fees, it is different from an entity. If we're talking about that, I think we should talk about that. That's why we're asking that, that's why we're asking if the Parliament is thinking about establishing some entity or a, what is this, Limpopo Road Agency, we're trying to establish something like that.
No, look, it's fine because, as I was saying, we don't want to, in this piece of legislation, to have things that are some dreams, if you like, and yet they really don't happen, they ought not to happen. If this issue of transfers does not belong there, it surely must also go. If, I mean, as you've just said, if it has to do with the subscriptions to all these bodies, that's something else. But also, if even if we were to say the budget office, surely it would also fall within the, firstly, the strat plan of Parliament, but secondly, its own budget. It would not be treated as an entity, I think. Now, if you look at this law, which I'll come back to after this one, this law seeks to treat the budget office as an entity. And it does, I think. We will come to that discussion at that time. We're not discussing it now, but let's deal with this transfer thing so that if it must go, we must then say it just goes in terms of all the amendments that we're talking about. Okay, let's go to 16. 17. People love these ones very much. 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37. Okay, I think what we shall then do is go back to the submission on unspent money. But can we just take lunch for now up to 2 o'clock? And thereafter, as I said, I wanted to disadvantage the advocates just to deal with this transfers matter quickly.
And so when he comes back, we clarify that, and we do take a decision clearly, and then proceed to the next one.
Okay. Mr. Kogoni, you were saying something. Van Homdan was very serious about the page 3 he wanted me to look at. Now, Mr. Khuyaman has just told me something else, which I'm not going to repeat. Now, I just want to say, because we want to deal with this as speedily as possible, the mandates are clear. We have outlined and highlighted all of the things that we think are problematic. Now, in the spirit of what I see in front of me, I'm talking now in terms of this document that Mr. Porter was referring to. And I was also telling Mr. Sokoni some interesting thing that he knows. Because this parliament is going to, what is the word?
Dissolve.
I don't want us to go and ask for another legal opinion. Because he was telling me that there's a professor who said to us, members of parliament, that the relationship amongst the three spheres of government, legislature, judiciary and parliament, is interdependent and organic, and is kind of linked. And so when we talk about parliament, we cannot talk about parliament as if it's an island. As this thing says, parliament is not a government department. But be that as it may, all that we will say then is that for now, and this is the kind of message we must just give to the incoming parliament, therefore, that they've got to go back on this matter in the context of this discussion I'm raising, of government having these interdependent structures. They are not isolated islands for others, this and that and that. And so in the context of that, how do we resolve this matter? But for purposes, therefore, of then passing this thing, what we have said for now is that in respect of the issues that were raised by the Auditor General, the Secretary of Parliament, and so on and so on, Advocate Jenkins has really dealt with all of those. Minus then this treatment of unspent funds. It's something that still needs further engagement. You must also remember that one of the things we were talking about in the other discussion was further research on some of these matters. And so, in line therefore with the kinds of mandates that we have, I do want us to then say we want to pass this piece of legislation, but also urging the incoming parliament to do more in respect of research about how these matters are dealt with in terms of business, so that we don't want to really hold everybody at ransom, if you like. We've raised a whole range of inconsistencies, contradictions ourselves. And I was really raising that discussion so that all of these things are clarified, are clear, but also kind of highlighted, so that when we deal with those matters in the next 5 years, we know where to start. We would not be starting afresh in respect of the... One of my colleagues was saying, with all the flaws that we see in the piece of legislation, let's of course one or two things have been addressed. Let's agree to that. Now I want to plead for a mover then. Mr. Kolweni disagrees. Well, everybody seems to disagree with me now. Okay, Mr. Kolweni, I'll take you all in that.
Chairperson, before a mover, May I beg for indulgence, just to highlight one thing for interest sake.
Mm.
When the Secretary of Parliament was making his presentation here, he made reference to Section 46,
mm-hmm.
Prohibition on contracts, whereby he was, in a way, pleading that we should delete Section D and E. When I was briefing my province also had also a concern with E, with C, about councillors. They wanted to know why are councillors included in this section. Because this is parliament business. Why do we have to write councillors in this bill? So I won't budge. I was just saying for interest, so it would appear, much as we have our own situation, but this bill has also trampling on other people's toes in a way. Thank you.
Mr. Porter?
Yes, well, I fully agree with you that when we go on with that, there's only one question that was not answered to me, and I can't get that answer. This is 76-1 bill. How constitutionally is this bill through the provinces not to have public hearings, neither have any inputs? I see you now say I'm raising. You can call me out of order, then it's off the table. But
order.
What? I would never have the answer in regarding of that process, Chair. And that we not. And I don't want to. Let I erase my case there. I don't want to reopen an issue now. Okay. Let I move. Let we accept the Chair.
Don't stress me, please, man. Don't go that route again.
Chair.
Other issues. I'm asking the question. Will the President sign this bill? If you look in section 76-1, I'm asking that question here. And then they will... I'm sorry, Chair.
Mr. Porter is proposing. But before that, Mr.
Now, Chair, I think that my understanding, Chair, is that, we said a certain thing that we wanted to correct. No? And before we do that, now, we want to propose adoption. We have, for instance, requested Advocate Jenkins to look at other things. Now, before even looking at that, now we're proposing adoption. Why don't we, what you call it, deal with these things that we wanted to correct? No? We have agreed that we want to make small amendments. We do those small amendments, and then we adopt it then.
Ms. Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. I was just wondering whether we shouldn't ask for our legal opinion. Mr. Butta has said, is this constitutional, bearing in mind the fact that the provinces haven't had public hearings and so on? And I think we should just have a reassurance from him. But, you know, is there any point in passing something when we're saying it's not perfect? And they've still got to go back on it. If there are major issues that need to be looked at, why are we rushing it? I know we've got to come to the end of a term, but do you pass something and say, but you must go back and look again? We're not happy with this. We're not concerned about that. Aren't we compromising ourselves?
Modula Stula, thank you. I don't know. Maybe the honourable member was somewhere outside. When you came to the conclusion, you started off by making a number of observations. Now, after your observations, you came to this conclusion. All the issues that the honourable members are raising are issues that you have reflected on. And after your reflection, you came to a conclusion as the chair of this committee. And you asked... No, but that is a fact. In terms of the term of office, what is supposed to happen, all those type of things, the chair reflected on that. And going to object to it. Chair, I mean, the Honorable Sogoni, Comrade Sogoni, has came up to say that we are re-eventing. Because of the yellow hooters are raised on the trapat and other hooters on the observations are marked on the trapat and trapat and trapat. It's registered, we have tapes, we have all those type of things. This is the final mandate meeting. And the provinces, all of them, with no exception, says that we confer. I don't see it KwaZulu-Natal here, they don't here. The provinces are conferring that if KwaZulu-Natal is one, it's 9, 8 out of 9, which gives us whatever percent. And it was all my previous speakers, they signed their time, everything, here is it. They are saying that we must adopt this particular bill.
Mr. Khuyaman, thank you. just the last one we have asked the advocate to check, the transfers.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. No, transfers, in fact, the transfers, except for those international ones which are excluded by two, because we treat those subscription payments to international bodies as transfers. There's a transfer element, our Chief Finance Officer just told me. Those are excluded from the bill. The transfers that the bill has in mind is specifically to political parties, constituency funds, and member support and support for leaders to perform their functions in the Assembly. So those are what Clause 35 has in mind.
I don't have a problem with what the Congress are proposing, but clearly, you know this thing of transcribing one thing and put cut and paste. Advocate Jenkins knows as much as we do, all of us, that some of this bill specifically mentions transfers to political parties. I think the issue that we were concerned with was the entity. What is this entity? So it's not just now we're talking political parties, we're talking this and that. And Section 35 makes provision for that. If we don't have entities, let's not what we call it, create things that don't exist, you know.
Colleagues, and this is what I was saying to you. With all of these problems, look, there are things that we have said must be dealt with, the advocate had dealt with those in the context of amendments. I'm saying, let's, with all of these things that are really problematic, unclear, and so on and so on, these same entities you're talking about, and I'm saying, let's then say we agree with this, because for now, you know, if we say we don't agree with it now, it means we've got to go back 10 steps backwards. And when you say you take, you agree to a bill with the amendments as they are, but also as I was saying earlier, let us say the fourth parliament must then deal with these things. Already we've identified the discussion that we were engaging with earlier is saying these things are problematic. These things must be then be dealt with in the coming parliament.
Chair, you got a proposal, you have a seconder.
Exactly, that's my point.
So is there any other
proposal to this?
We propose, we second,
exactly.
If there's another proposal, then we have to vote.
There's no opposition, Madam Kun.
Not quite, Honourable Chairperson, but we have not heard what KZN is saying. We need to hear what they are saying also.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, my conscience is not clear. So therefore, I will have to agree with the vote.
Look, man, don't go back. Please, assist me. KZN, you know KZN, I'm not able to read this thing. It's very tiny.
But, sir, I'm not on the record. I won't participate in this debate.
No, please.
I will support.
Let me just read KZN. Let me read for you KZN. A letter has been submitted by the Secretary of the KwaZulu-Natal Legislature to the Acting Secretary of the NCOP, expressing her concern with the adopted process and requesting clarification on the matter. To date, there has not been response to this letter, and we have been informed that the meeting of the NCOP Select Committee is proceeding today to consider final mandates on the bill. The Finance Committee in KZN wishes to express its profound concern with the process that has been followed in consideration of the bill. Legal advice has been sought on the matter, and I attach here with a legal opinion by one of the legislature's legal advisors. As can be seen, it expresses the view that the process of bypassing the negotiating mandate and shortening the time given to the provinces to consider the bill is constitutionally challengeable. The committee has not been able to conclude its discussion on the final mandate on the bill as yet. In the interest of not delaying the passage of the bill, the committee has agreed that it will try and get a mandate to you as soon as possible. The committee is however of the view that it will not be prejudiced by any unlawful and unprocedural action taken by the NCOP, and also requested that the matter be taken further by the Speaker of the Legislature. I trust that the above is in order. Yours, Mrs. P.F. Scott, Chairperson of the Committee.
Okay, I have
concluded. So let's then pass this one. Can we then agree? We're going to debate on the 17th. On the 17th, where are the volunteers?
Can I propose yourself as chairperson?
Mr. Huyaman?
Chair, I propose that you as chair
make
the statement regarding all that. Because I think this was a long discussion and you can make that statement.
Session 76? 76?
Chair, I'll second the proposal.
Okay, no, it's right. I'll do that. Okay, let's then deal with the money bill. Quickly, we've agreed to it with all the amendments that you did, etc., and that's right. Let's just go to this one. First page, the money bill. Look, the first thing that I think I just want to agree with you, I want to appeal to you to agree with me. I'm proposing a whole range of things here. On the first page, I think what we need to be looking at here, in fact, the title, the first thing that we must deal with, the Money Bill's Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Bill, then therefore the title, that's why it says, the bill is to provide a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament and provincial legislatures.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is 75 bill.
Yeah.
If we make any amendments to this bill as a committee or changing anything, we have to refer it back to the NI. I'm right or correct?
Yeah.
So that will not be passed actually now. Because if we had to refer that 75 bill back to them, and the committee had to go again, and that bill had to come back to us again.
No, it's not going to come back to us again.
I'm just see the time frame, Chair, because of 75 bill. I'm asking the question, Chair. You must guide us here. If we make any changes, they have to go back. If they not agree with our changes, then they have to come back. And there can be arbitration and all that type of thing. Chair, that is the way that we have to go.
Okay.
So
you want us to just take it as is?
I propose that we take it as is, Chair.
But then there are still fundamental things again.
I
just want to raise some critical matters again. The one thing is the one of norms and standards. But one big issue is page 10. Just can you go to page 10? There's something called the budget office. Now, the big issue there, colleagues, is that it says 15.1,
There is hereby established a parliamentary budget office headed by a director, the main objective of which is to provide independent, objective and professional advice and analysis to Parliament on matters related to the budget, etc., etc. The big issue here, therefore, is that if you go further, is that on page 11, that's 5, sub B, A, a person with the requisite experience, qualification and leadership skills must be manage the parliamentary budget office with the functions et cetera as a director by resolution. In other words, this person must be appointed by resolution. That's a big issue. Now, there's only one person in parliament who is employed by resolution, and that is the Secretary of Parliament. Now, what we're doing, therefore, in terms of this budget office, we're creating a monster called RAL, something similar to RAL, Road Agents Limpopo. Because what we're saying there is that this director is equal to the Secretary of Parliament if you employ him through a resolution. But number two, it says a committee or committees of Parliament, in other words, must sit and appoint this person. That's another big problem. I'm just raising that sometime. Because if we do that knowingly, then it means that's what we are doing. Because it means then this person would not essentially account to Parliament and to the Secretary of Parliament. If one, he or she is appointed on the basis of a resolution, and therefore we are equaling him to the Secretary of Parliament. In other words, whilst we are saying this is a parliamentary budget office, but then the person at the head, by implication and practically, would not then account to the Secretary of Parliament if we do that. That's the one big issue. And I'm not sure whether, therefore, we want to, again, it has to do with our own experience here, as I was talking about your RAL and so on and so on. Hang on.
Okay.
Then, that's the one thing. But also, it's not stipulated clearly there, just in terms, because again, terms of employment would not be worked out by the Secretary of Parliament. They would be worked out by a committee. Okay? And so on and so on. That's a big thing. Now, part of the big issue that is not clear in that respect, while it is not yet spelled out, the budget of this office would ordinarily come from Parliament. What is not yet clear is how do you then resolve a dispute between this director and the Secretary of Parliament in respect of the budget. Okay? That's another big issue. Now, I'm saying, again, it is a matter that we are going to pass consciously. Do we want to do that? I'm just saying that is the big issue that I think we must consider. Yes, ma'am. And Mr. Potter.
You know, sir, I thought that before we engage in more what you call a debate, Advocate Jenkins had his hand up. I think that he wanted to clarify in terms of in the event that Parliament is dissolved and we have an amendment, what can be done? I think the rules make provision. You can do that. It's not that things are so bleak. There is a window. Advocate Jenkins will clarify in terms of that. But with respect to what you call it, to this office, I think that the principle is that we don't have a problem with the budget office, Chair. We accept the budget office. It must be there. We agree. But I think that from clauses 5, sub clause 5, 15.5, downwards, I think those must be removed, you know, because I don't don't think that we should really allow a situation where, we consciously, what you call, adopt a situation where there are two secretaries in parliament. I think that there are a number of offices that operate in parliament. Whether it's human resource, whether you call it that and that, each one has got its own budget. And they are therefore, what you call, given those budgets. And this one must also, in that context, be given that budget. But I don't think that we should not elevate it to the level of the secretary. And then we have the secretary, we have someone who is... I don't think that this is the intention is that. I think we're not convinced of this committee.
Chair, we have only received it now. We haven't got the money, but you refer to one item there, please.
I'm seconding Comrade Sogo because this person's role is not going to be that of the secretary, and you can't have two bosses. I mean, really, it is not going to be on, because even here it is very clear what this parliamentary budget officer would do and what his or her role is in terms of advising, in terms of doing all those type of things. So you can't be equated to equal to the Secretary of Parliament. Actually, he must be able to report to the Secretary of Parliament. So if it means that we have to change that and send it back, let's do that. We'll know. I mean, we have just passed one which we know, all of us in this room, what's wrong with that. But you can't send two things through which are wrong, no, Chair. It can't be acceptable. I mean, our record will be tarnished with two bills. Coming with a very clear, clean record, then we just mess it up. No, can't.
I mean, even his employment, the rules of the public service must be followed. Otherwise, it will be very difficult to discipline him. I mean, he's not going to do NGO work here, it's government work. So the procedures of employing him must be followed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. If I may abuse the floor, just on this point. excuse me. The lines of accountability, if one wants to keep that clear, and what I'm hearing from the committee is we don't want to have two secretaries there, then I would agree that from subclause 5 downwards. Then one must just also, I think, in subclause 1, not mention that there must be a director that's headed. One must say the secretary must establish. And the full accountability for the functions. One can set out the functions there, and one can put a phrase there to say all other functions that Parliament or the secretary requires from it, but the secretary to Parliament will then be the accounting person for this budget office, and then not confuse it with the director. Someone will just have to make that change as well, in addition to removing a lot. Just on that point, Honourable Chair, the point I raised my hand earlier was the amendments the committee are now or have adopted or proposed to the financial management of Parliament bill. That's a 76 bill that will go back to the National Assembly. If they accept those changes, it will be sent to the President for assent. If they disagree with those changes, the bill will go to mediation. On the 75 bill, the money bill amendment procedure, the amendments that this committee make can be accepted by the National Assembly, and then it's sent to the President for assent. If the National Assembly disagrees, they can overrule it and send the either let the bill lapse or send the bill to the President for assent. And if this happens after Parliament is dissolved, it's of no consequence because in terms of the Constitution, the National Assembly remains competent to function until the first day, before the first day of polling of the new elections. Of course, the NCOP remains competent to function until the new permanent delegates have been appointed. So it's even after the elections, the NCOP remains competent to function.
Okay. That's very clear. Look, I think that is very good. I'm happy that the members are saying, well, let's also not then create a monster then. And I think as you are saying then, if the National Assembly disagrees, it's fine. But then in that context, then let me say then what I was saying earlier then. The proposal I was making, therefore, in respect of we've finished with the budget office, which is fine. Let's go back to that thing where we're saying a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament and provincial legislatures then. And so anything that relates to Parliament must also apply to provinces. And therefore the Minister of Finance, MEC of Finance, in the province, and then the provincial, national budget, provincial budget,
uh-huh.
And then one of the issues I think we need to take out here, colleagues, is the whole chapter on the division of revenue. Because that's page 7, because there is an established, already, that's a practice we do on the division of revenue bill. And it's a 76, by the way. And so we really are not going to change the way we've been dealing with it. And so I'm just saying, can't we agree that the whole of that thing that deals with the division of revenue is taken off? Because already there is a process and a whole cycle. Because the division of revenue bill is a 76 bill, basically. And it's a matter that we can't negotiate, basically. Because it's already there as a process that is taking place. Now, passing the revenue bill is problematic on 11. There's a big issue there. 11 sub 3D. Consider regional and international tax trends. I just want to pose a question to you now. How would we, in our region, the SACO or SADC, in looking at the tax trends? I mean, ordinarily, tax trends in this region are very loose. They're not tight, basically. The only country that has a very strong tax regime is South Africa, in the region. And so if you consider their tax trends, etc., etc., exactly what is meant there? What are we dealing with in that regard? Do you know, Advocate?
Honorable Chair, I can tell you where this comes from. It comes from the Treasury. This was a proposal that the Treasury made to, when looking at revenue bills, to have specific tax principles ingrained there. Now, I think it's sort of generic to say you have to look at international and regional tax trends, except you find yourself, as you say, in a position where South Africa is a much stricter tax regime than most other SADC or SACO countries. Probably Botswana has got quite a strong system as well, I'm just assuming. So you find yourself with a principle that's maybe very good if you're living in the European Union, but that principle, when you look at South Africa, what does it mean? Does it mean that we must also relax our tax regime a bit? And Parliament, does Parliament now have the liberty to say, well, why should we have such a strict tax regime when our neighbours do not have such a... So one must probably not interpret it in a way that's going to problematize things, but rather to say, well, let's not go back and rather go forward with this. But it creates a certain ambivalence and a certain question arises. I mean, if we look at regional, are we bound by the regional implications? But as I said,
already the President has rejected finance pegging of the currency of Zimbabwe, for circumstance. Now, in that context, how do you, I think you're right. Let's allow it to stand for now. But I think we need to do more work on this one. It's a bit tight. It's complicated. Because really, the tax regimes in the SACO, SADC, in fact, we're the only country that is really collecting. And Botswana, maybe. The whole rest are not even. They don't even have a structure like the way we have, the South African Receiver of Revenue Service, for instance. So clearly there's a problem there. Maybe it's an ideal in future, in the next 10, 20, 30. But for now, it is a bit problematic. Now, and this resolution, things have been dealt with fine. And then one of the big issues, again, is that this bill has not been costed from the point of view of Parliament now. Even though a general statement is made here that says financial implications on page 13, the establishment of the Parliamentary Budget Office will have substantial financial implications. You see, that's a broad general statement. But the bottom line is that the bill has not been costed. You know, colleagues, whenever a bill is made, first thing to do, cost it. So this one has not been costed, but it's not a big deal still. And then, So let's then throw all of those things to Advocate Jenkins, just to say, do all of those things. And those norms and all of these matters that we've just read, removing that the division of revenue part, that five with all its subs, and then that's it. Yes, well.
That's the other thing is the, you know, section 12, and maybe it is there in other sections. You know that these time frames, this must happen within 2 days, this must happen within 9 days. I'm not sure where did these time frames come from. And now, if, for instance, within 4 days, the minister doesn't do this, I think that I suspect that we're putting ourselves in a tight corner, in something that we're not going to be able to manage. And once we do that, it will make a mockery of this legislation. Can't we find a way of saying this needs to be done in a short space of time, this needs to be done, these are the things that need to be done, so that maybe they go to the rules or to regulations rather than having these time frames enacted here and then they become a monster. So.
Right. In fact, the National Treasury had raised these tight time frames. For instance, the public hearings. Couldn't we look at 30 days? Would 30 days be problematic?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, instead of the 16. The bill talks about 16 days. Shouldn't 30 days... 30 days, wouldn't it be 30 days be fine?
Yeah.
Right. And then in terms of that 2 days, the minister must respond in the two. The people's budget says 7 days. Wouldn't the 7 days suffice? Okay, I think that's fine. Because really, you are right, it's going to kill everybody. Ministers are doing all sorts of things that are all over the show, and you are really pushing. Exactly. No, I think 30 days is a bit fair, Advocate, wouldn't you think?
Chairperson, I would like to not stick out my neck too far on this one. There's when the Portfolio Committee looked at this bill, they had a time schedule in mind. That time schedule is attached to the report that it made to the National Assembly. When one starts working or changing time frames, it has a knock-on effect on both sides. I will look at that. I'm aware of I've studied the People Budgets Campaign submission on enlarging certain time frames. The alternative to that would be not to set strict time frames within the bill. I'd leave that for rules. Because the cycle remains a cycle. There will always only be so many parliamentary days to do this work and to pass the budget per year as any other. And one can provide for it in the rules and not in the bill. So I'll look at both options.
You do that.
Yep.
Thank you very much. On that note, is there any mover? Mr. Colin Move, seconder?
make a good statement? Mr. Robinson. Ms. Robinson. Oh, yes, yes. Thank you very much, and we have adjourned, and thanks for your active